Reset the podcast is brought to you in association with Liars, the non-alcoholic spirits brand. Whether it's low alcohol or no alcohol, Liars helps you enjoy your classic favourite cocktails.
Hello everyone, my name is Suki Thompson. Welcome to Reset the podcast. A place for you to get some inspiration and advice to help you live a more fulfilling work life. I do hope that your journey to feel more connected, more inspired, just a bit more energized starts here. Take a moment now with me to reset. Keith Moore is one of the most progressive marketeers in the industry. He is also one of the most thought-provoking. In this Reset the Podcast, the former Chief Marketing Officer of Santander and now CMO at Camelot talks about why knowing yourself is the key to being a great leader. During our time together, he also talks about why purpose matters and what purpose means to him. Keith is known for his honesty, his directness, and his ability to provoke, and all these qualities are on show as he talks about his own process of resetting for the second half of his life. Oh, and make sure you listen to the very end to hear an outtake from our podcast where Keith reads his new personal leadership mission statement. You'll love it. Keith, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks, Suki. How are you?
I'm very well. Yes, so on a scale of 1 to 10, how energised do you feel?
I would say 7 out of 10 today.
Okay, why would it be a 7?
Well, I think it's the first part of the week, I think, is always slightly more draining than the later part of the week. I think it's partly being in a retail business. I think it's partly... I don't know, actually. It's really weird. I've noticed a trend where I tend to be most tired, weirdly, on a Monday, even though I don't really drink, particularly during the whole lockdown thing. I'm not a one for drinking at home, so I've not really been doing any of that. So it's not like a draining weekend thing. So I don't know. But it's the energy tends to pick up as the week goes on.
Oh, that's really interesting, that, isn't it? I usually start off the week the other way around, actually. I'm an early in the week person, and by the end, I sometimes feel a bit tired. So that's really interesting. Thank you. It's lovely to talk to you today, Keith. We were just discussing before we started this that we've known each other a long time, but actually we don't really know how we met. It was certainly through Oyster Catchers in some way, shape or form, but... you seem to have been omnipresent, certainly in the industry for a long time. You were 25 years in what was Santander, but also the kind of merger before that. And I wanted to really talk about three things today, about culture and your passion for creating amazing cultures, around well-being and your focus on that, because it's a really critical part of what makes you you. And then a little bit about the big reset that you've done in the last kind of year or so. But let's start with culture. So, you know, I was looking at this great description of Santander, that Santander was the white knight of the banking industry. And I wonder whether you are the white knight of the CMO in the banking industry, because I think for me, you were definitely one of the people in that very tough environment that talked about culture and the importance of your people way before so many others were. Talk to me about that kind of journey for you.
Well, first of all, it's very kind of you to say, Suki. It sounds a bit grand, that. I won't claim that for myself. But I can actually date it right back to a time when I do remember a time when I started getting more interested in culture. I'd like you, obviously, I'm racking my brains about that thing about when we met. It's got me really fascinated. I'm gonna come back on that if it comes to me. But it actually started off really with my own curiosity around this idea of there must be more to life than working and playing hard. It had to be something that sustained you as an individual, mentally and physically and emotionally. And as I found out, then spiritually, although that is, by the way, very clearly not in a religious sense, may I say. Mm. It's just this idea of a full, complete understanding of the self. And it was a work I did with a company called The Energy Project back in the day, actually, and a guy called Jean Gomes. And it was really about, it's the first exposure I'd ever had to this complete self concept. And I really liked it. It really resonated with me. And it's something which I'd been searching for, because in a culture like Santander, and Abbey National before it, banking generally, but Santander particularly, because it's a very powerful culture. You either love it or you hate it. Mm. There was a need to recognize that people need something else other than that all-pervasive culture to kind of survive as a unit. They need to find their reason for being and their own safe cultural environment to kind of exist and grow it. And so it was this idea of trying to explore what that was, so that the team itself could develop its own culture. And that meant that it could feel like it had a, you know, I don't know if anybody will remember the old Ready Breck ads, but you have those little red, the little orange glow around you. Mm. When you're going into work, you've got this little orange glow of culture, which allows you to have a little barrier, not a full physical barrier, but a little bit of protection against the big corporate machine that was going to try and grind you down.
I absolutely love that. That's brilliant. So that little orange glow, what did you do to try and help your team create that orange glow around them?
Well, in my early incarnations of trying to make this work, I'll perhaps, if we've got time, I'll talk a bit more about how that evolved in over the course of time. Mm. But to start off with, it was about individuals going on their own journey. And actually, I then, I guess it was 2013, 2014 time, went on the Marketing Academy Fellowship. And that helped us very much explore the idea of self. I also did the Oxford University Strategic Leadership Program, which is really a program about learning about yourself. It was when I first really, and I got this fully rounded, like 360 view of knowing yourself is the key to being a really good leader and to help create culture. So what that meant was I was trying to help people understand who themselves and who they were, not me telling them, but encouraging them to go on this journey of understanding what their purpose was, mm. understanding why they, what made them happy, what didn't make them happy, understanding that things that don't make you happy are still part of your daily life and you have to embrace them. Not everything is perfect. And I guess it was early kind of rudimentary attempts to do this to start off with, like layman's attempts to do this kind of activity at a time, like you say, when not a lot of people were doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what did it look like for you when you, first of all, did you find it hard looking at yourself and think, actually, I'm going to have to understand myself before I can do this for my team? How did you feel about doing that?
Well, I would say to start off with, it was impossible. I found it an impenetrable task, a subject and task. I couldn't work out where you were supposed to start and what the end looked like and what was, because bear in mind, in a corporate culture, you're sort of designed to identify a task, go at the goal, complete it with success, overachieve it, and then move on to the next one. And this kind of thing was a bit more amorphous. You had to feel it rather than experience, you know, and you had to experience it rather than physically go, right, I had this thing and now I've got, I didn't have this thing and now I've got this thing. So yeah. It's like, I've written something down on a bit of paper and that's fine. And that sort of completely defeats the object, because actually what you've got to do is kind of lie back, free your mind. And you don't have to meditate. You can be mindful. You can not be mindful. You can be exercising. You could be doing anything really, but you need some way of opening your mind up to this idea. I mean, you know, the Japanese massively encompassed this concept with this thing called Ikigai, didn't they? Which is this, this sense of, by the way, I discovered this much, much later. If somebody had told me this right at the start, it would have been really easy to understand what they're talking about, because these people have been doing it for centuries and centuries. Yeah. But we'd never really embraced it in Western culture in the same way. And so all these journeys that you go on looking at religion or looking at philosophy and culture, it's not really about following a particular mantra. It's about picking the bits out that work for you. And this, the Ikigai stuff, was the best way I could find to describe what I was trying to say to people. And it made it a lot easier if I said people have been doing it for centuries and it's a proven concept, because then people, yes, gives you a reason to be listened to, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that, but as I say, this journey of self, I think I always had a purpose when I was younger. I had a purpose when I was 19 that I wanted to be a marketing director of a FTSE 100 by the time I was 35. I wrote it down when I was at uni.
19, really?
Yeah, I've still got the bit of paper that it was on. But it was a very one-dimensional work-related goal. So I wouldn't call it a purpose. I'd call it, actually, looking back, it was a goal.
Yeah.
And it drove a lot of personal decisions I made. It made me very single-minded, slightly selfish. But I achieved the goal. The trouble was, and I discovered this when I did the fellowship, the Marketing Academy, I couldn't think of what my next thing was.
Yeah.
And I'd never really explored purpose and understood myself. Mm. So that's the journey I tried to take people on.
Yeah. Yeah. So just pushing a little bit more on you, and then we'll go out to maybe the team a bit more. So what qualities did you love about yourself?
So I embraced my honesty and my directness and my transparency and my desire to provoke, to provocate.
Yeah.
And I think before I was kind of conscious of, I would often describe myself as an outsider, but I wasn't actually. I was a provocateur. I wasn't an outsider at all. I was just trying to take a different view. I was trying to push for a different way of looking at something. And I became aware of the fact that the leaders that gave me the jobs that they gave me wanted that in the team. They needed the balance. So, because it's when leadership, the people in senior leadership jobs had recognized this need to start not having identikit team members. You know, that kind of 70s and to some extent early 80s view of management, as people went through into the noughties and into the new century, they definitely, I think people recognize the need for, I wouldn't go as far as, it's not a neurodiversity debate, that's something completely different. This is just having different types of people around you.
Yeah.
And the value of having that, rather than lots of people who do things like you do. And yeah, that paved a way for people like me.
Yeah,
that's what Santander did, actually, to be honest. It was, and that allowed me to embrace energy, passion, transparency, directness, openness, truthfulness. This concept, I mean, one of the things that is very central to me is a concept of fairness. And I think one of the things that used to drive me, I used to get quite annoyed a lot of the time. And when I explored it a lot with help, I discovered it was because I was seeing what I believed would be displays of unfair actions,
yeah,
or good results coming from the wrong, unfair type of inputs. And so once I understood that, I could learn how to work with that and control it and understand how to channel the energy that came as a result of it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Did you get, where did that sense of unfairness or fairness come from? Did it come from when you were a child, or did it come from something that happened when you were in work?
I actually think it's an inherent trait I've had, if I look back. It's really hard to teach people about fairness, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's a relative concept, right?
Yeah.
It's very subjective. And it's also culturally really different. The beauty of working at Santander was I was fully immersed in Spanish culture. I had 15 years of massive immersion, daily immersion into a different culture, and it's brilliant. I love Spanish culture, and in the same way I love British culture, right? But the combination of the two is a weird concoction, and it's the same everywhere. And what you understand is your concept of fairness isn't the same as everybody else's. And you have to kind of understand that that's okay, because you can't impose your value set on people. It's not right. It's not fair, actually. It's the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Everything comes back to this point. And actually, I learned to understand that it became much easier for me to accept the swings and pendulums of life if I understood that fairness within me is driving a lot of my belief structure. And that concept of fairness has to be my concept, not everybody else's. You let go of that and you go, okay, as long as I'm feeling. It's like this old, it's like the more modern interpretation of that from a kind of self-development point of view, which is look after yourself first, because that's the best way to make everybody else better. Yeah. That was another big thing that came to that was taught, that I was helped with. This concept of taking care of yourself is the number one priority. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with selfishness in that concept.
Yes, yes. And self-care, it's so fascinating, isn't it? That so many people, particularly leaders, find that self-care piece very, very hard, because our automatic reaction is to try and either look after or control or, you know, just empower other people, but don't put the same scrutiny on ourselves. You said that then, you know, that was the sort of the beginning of a cultural understanding and appreciation. It became more sophisticated over time. What kind of things did you learn to help and support your team with and doing?
Well, I think there's two main things. One is about helping the individual develop as themselves, so their understanding of the concept of self, the ikigai kind of concept. And then there's the need for teams to have goals and purposes, so that they can feel part of something that's growing and building. And this is something that I started at Santander. It was a program, actually. It was called we called it Marketing 4.0. It was just a name. But what really it was about in Santander was about creating a group of people, a team of people who felt empowered for the digital age. And this was 5-6 years ago, a long time ago. And that really helped us identify how to develop as a group of people technically, how to develop as a group of people from a knowledge-based point of view, where to point people to read things, how to choose what kind of training courses people were on, how to speak to our partners and about like media owners and things like that, where they could help us with training and development. People like Thinkbox do this, people like Newsworks do it, but also I have to call them out because they were absolutely amazing. Google helped us a lot. We got a significant amount of training for our people, from over 3,000 hours training from Google for nothing. And that's because we chose to invest in Google because it worked for us across a range of things, from, you know, like media solutions through to analytics and stuff like that. But Google are very good at helping businesses' knowledge base grow, because obviously it's good for them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that combination of technical structured skill and knowledge development with this exploration of self and understanding of the self is really, I guess, the twin pronged approach to how I've tackled this. And that kind of technical skill knowledge development is something that I kicked off, but it's something the team took hold of and owned and grew. They set their own purpose and direction. They set their own concept of work streams. In fact, there were pillars that we built OKRs around, objectives and key results that we developed sprints around, so that we could make rapid progress and iteration, so people could see progress quickly. That works really well for that kind of team goal stuff, because that's the kind of methodology and the kind of rhythm people feel happy in, because it feels like work. And then the opposite approach is taken with the self, which is find time, and we will give you time in work. So we will give you time in your weekly work, you know, your 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, to go and do stuff. We used to call it at Santander explorer time. Yes. And we'd encourage people to go out and explore.
Yeah.
And what that meant was people could go to shopping centers to look at retail solutions. People would go and spend some time in libraries. People would go to museums, go on a boat down a river. Whatever the thing is, go and ride, like I do, I ride a bike.
Yeah.
It helps me free my mind. And so this idea of not doing something is actually doing something. And that's the difficult bit for people to get their heads around. It takes a long time for people. By the way, lots of people don't really ever fully get it. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's part of their journey.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And so, you know, from that, I guess, you know, and I love the fact that you talk about, what we talk about is performance and well-being. So that's kind of understanding of self, but very closely linked to performance, and brilliant focus on how you can be expert. So in terms of the purpose piece, so you had a purpose for your team at Santander and a purpose for individuals and a purpose for yourself. What is that purpose that you have for yourself?
Actually, it's very straightforward. It's living a healthy life and enjoying every day. That is it. It's active, it evolves, it moves with me as I get older, and it is not related to my job, but it is related to my job, because to live a healthy life and enjoy every day, I have to enjoy my job.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I can't deliver on that. And it was actually, I have to be honest, Suki, it was actually moving to Camelot that helped me open up my mind to that purpose, because it wasn't that, I didn't have that at the time. I was still swimming in the sea of uncertainty. You know, I hadn't got my fully rounded concept of self as I'd hit my middle ages. You know, I'm 52 now. As around 50, I think I had my 40th moment when I was 50. You know, okay. Some people have these epiphanal moments when they're 40. I think mine was when I was 50, actually. That's when I decided to leave Santander and try something different, because I felt I went through a phase of describing my time at Santander as I was on a smooth trajectory to a landing, like a 747 on a long haul flight. Yeah. And my wife called me out one day and said, "You're only 50, Keith. Don't you think it's a bit early to be talking about a smooth landing?" Meaning retirement. Yeah. And I was like, "God, she's right." So I had to shake it up a bit, you know, and then Camelot came along, and that's hard,
isn't it? You know, so you know, this podcast is called Reset. Resetting, you know, at 50. And you had been in the business for a long time, and clearly, you know, you loved it. You were very, very well respected. What went through, you know, why did you feel this need to go further, to kind of understand yourself some more and then also shake up the environment you were in?
Because I took some time to because I've been on this journey of understanding myself and getting a fully rounded view of myself, which is, by the way, an evolving journey, right?
Mm, sure.
I'd come to recognize that I'd got frustrated in life, not at work. Work was going really well. And you're right, I love Santander. I still do. I love my time there. The people were great. The culture was great, but different. You know, it's a very hard culture, but I like that. But I think I just, without realizing, slipped into a bit more, well, I didn't challenge myself enough. I don't want to say cruise control, because the job was too tough for that.
Yeah.
Belittles the job that I did and people now do and the team that worked on it. The wrong phrase, and I've never found a way to describe it properly. But I guess what I mean is I felt that I should try something different, because I was at a point in life where I needed to change myself. It wasn't Santander. It wasn't the job I was doing. It was me. I needed to change myself.
Yeah. Maybe it's more a bit like you have too much muscle memory. You know, if you only cycle, you can be super fit, you can love it, but you don't actually challenge your body to run or to dive or to swim. And therefore, it's quite difficult to feel more than you are yourself at the time.
I think you're exactly right. I think somebody like me was very focused on staying physically fit. And I hadn't worked out how to be emotionally fit. I mean, you're right. Even though I've been advocating this journey and exploration that people went on, I spiritually felt right. And I mentally felt very well, because I took care of my mind, and I physically felt well, but emotionally I wasn't, because I'd got a one-dimensional view. And actually, when I left Santander, I got a reaction from my body and my spirit and my whole self that I was not expecting. It was like a bereavement. So I had a 3-month kind of window between the two jobs, and I was expecting to use it as great downtime, but actually I felt pretty grim, not physically, just emotionally. I felt weird. And my wife said, "Well, you just suffered a loss."
Yeah.
And as usual, she's a font of a lot of wisdom really in my life. And she said, "Yeah, you just suffered a loss. You got to embrace it. You got to accept that's what's happened and recognize it like a loss, because then you can move on to the new thing."
Yeah,
more.
That's so interesting. I remember talking to you at the time. What did you do to embrace it? Did it make you feel frustrated? Because you had all these plans of things to do in those 3 months, but you had to maybe take a step back and...
Yeah, I think it did make me frustrated, actually. But the pervading thing was I was feeling really sad. right? This is the weird thing. I felt really sad and I wasn't expecting to. And so therefore it really hit me. And I was like, why am I feeling like this? I was very annoyed with myself. And once again, my wife said, you've got a few months off. You'll never have it again. It's the summer. It's from June to September. So it's like the best time in the UK. We're very fortunate to have a little house down by the beach in Broadstairs in Kent. We were down there for the whole time. We had lots of things planned. She said, can't you just like enjoy it? But it's a really difficult thing to say to people that, but she was right. I just needed to embrace the everyday thing. And on the purpose point that we talked about a minute ago, this idea of enjoying every day, that's when I got very present. Mm-hmm. And I had a problem in my life about being present as an individual because of my tendency to want to try and develop and control outcomes because I'm a leader in a big job with responsibility for a lot of people. The tendency is to take that into your home life. And by the way, I shouldn't be doing that in my work life either. And I became a much better leader when I kind of worked much harder on being present and then enjoying every day. It was deliberately designed to be a very present focused purpose.
Yes. Yes. Which I really love. And so what did you do and what do you now do to be more present? Because, you know, I think it's something that a lot of people talk about. It's actually still quite hard to do.
Yeah, I agree. Well, there's some very straightforward things. So I make sure I have space in a day. And there's some rules I set myself, you know, and I have to be honest, the lockdown has allowed me the ability to develop these because you get a little bit more space if you choose to. And I know the working day originally when the lockdown first started was a bit nuts for everybody. It was like, when does that kind of Zoom thing start and finish? Like 7 till 9? What is it, you know? But then you settle in and you realize you've got to create this space. And when you do, actually, because you're not commuting or moving around or having to meet lots of people externally, friends or work-related, you actually do have a bit more space than you think if you choose to actively recognise it. And that was it, creating some space to think, to be mindful. I mean, I don't meditate, but I use Headspace. I, you know, practice mindfulness. Particularly breathing is something that works really well for me. My body really likes breathing.
Does it?
Breathing.
Yeah.
But it sounds stupid, that. But, you know, this kind of concept of managed breathing. Mm. Nothing too technical, just ordinary stuff. And then getting outside every day. So I do walking meetings. If I haven't got any space in the day, if I've got space in the day, I'll walk without meetings. Listen to music or listen to a podcast or sometimes nothing. Listen to the... If I'm in London, it's nice to have that on because it's just street noise often a lot of the time. But if I'm down by the coast, which I haven't been able to be for most of the last 12 months, it's listening to the sea, listening to the sounds of the power of the sea, which is, you know, very relaxing if you're walking by it, for those fortunate enough to be able to do so. And then it's about doing activities that I enjoy and not doing activities that I don't. I think I was trying to do too much stuff. So I re-embraced reading. I mean, this all sounds so noddy, Suki, but it's like reading fiction really. I used to be an avid reader of fiction. Then I guess for a decade, I didn't really pick up a book, if I'm being honest. Mm-hmm. And so I've picked up books again, and it's not layering too many things in, just slowly bringing things back in. I'll, you know, listen to Keris Matthews on a Sunday morning on BBC Radio 6. That's a little treat to myself. And you recognize these things are things that make you happy, not things you should do. You recognize why it makes you happy, because it calms me down. It slows my breathing down. Or with Keris, you hear interesting things, so it stimulates your mind. You have interesting guests. You hear a bit of music that gets your hairs up on your arms and you go, yes. Or the reverse, it has a soporific effect. So it's all those simple, it's the simple things about recognizing the literal beauty in every moment or every day, if you can.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's lovely. I love the fact that you say, you know, it's a treat. So the things that are a treat, the things that make you feel alive, it feels to me like you have had that moment where you can just feel more alive, feel more in the present, you know, be able to enjoy all those important things. And I think quite a lot of us during lockdown have had that moment to pause and reflect on what really does mean something to us, what is important, and be able to enjoy. I've never seen so many people walk around enjoying a cup of coffee as they walk along. as they have perhaps in the last year, because it's one of the few things we can do, I guess.
I agree. I think literally when we get the chance to spend time with people, there won't necessarily need to be the big event around it anymore. Mm. It can just be going over to somebody's house and sitting in the garden, having a cuppa and chatting and actually seeing somebody physically.
Yeah.
It's quite a, that alone makes the hairs on my arms stand up. And we can't even really give them a hug. I'm sure there'll be plenty of illicit hugs going on, being fair, but we shouldn't until the 21st of June. But then imagine what it's going to be like just to hug people again, that simple thing. It really honestly makes the hairs on my body stand up on end. It makes me full of emotion just thinking about it, because we've forgotten how simple that little thing is. The Spanish culture taught me the value of touch, the recognition of the moment of it's okay to embrace a friend. You don't need to be formal. You can embrace somebody and say hi.
Yeah.
I love that continental European cultural aspect to that. It's not inappropriate at all. We're talking about people you know who you want to display affection for, to say hello because you haven't seen them for a while. And in business meetings, it can really open a meeting up if when you meet somebody, you're giving them a hug beforehand because you know them and you've known them for 10 years.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you give them a hug?
Yeah, I know. It's you're absolutely right. And that is the lovely thing about the Spanish and some of the other Europeans, that real sense of openness. Talk to me about then the culture that you found at Camelot. So, you know, you've been in lockdown for some of it, quite a lot of it, I guess. Have you found a very different culture? Have you found a culture you like more or less, or is it just different?
Well, I'm having a fantastic time at Camelot, even though we're in lockdown, because the culture is amazing. And I'm really, really enjoying it, but I think it's right for me at this point in my life. It would be difficult for me to say, because I'd be being very subjective, Camelot's culture is better than Santander. What I will say is it's really, really, really different. And I'm not being political about that answer. The culture at Santander served me really, really well. I loved it. I thrived in it. It was fantastic. But the culture I discovered at Camelot has allowed me to enjoy this phase of my life so much more. There's one little way I can characterize it by, in a big corporate culture like Santander, there are politics. You have to accept there's politics. There's tens of thousands of people. It's a global business. You have to some extent, have eyes in the back of your head. And what I mean by that is not because people are out to get you, but because you have to try and understand all of the complexities of all of the relationships all of the time. And the people who do that best navigate their way through a successful career in a big corporate. They understand, they can picture how the machine works. It's like the Matrix. You can see it. You're like Keanu Reeves. You can see the Matrix moving. You go to Camelot and the business is a much purer business because it has a more limited product line and is around for much, much more of a single-minded purpose about generating returns for good causes. And it's less than 1,000 people, right? So what it is very different, and it doesn't have that need for you to... Well, the biggest problem I had when I first joined is I kept thinking I was second-guessing why people were doing things, and actually people were just trying to help. And I thought, are they trying to score some points for later? Are they trying to bank some favors? And it wasn't. I kept looking over my shoulder and there was nobody there. And it was, and that's what's beautiful about it, because there is none of that. And I sort of say to my people, it's a great culture to be in, but it would be a difficult one to leave for that reason.
Yes, I can.
So there's always two sides to a situation. So enjoy it. That's what we say to people. Enjoy it and recognize where it's good. I talk to my people in my team and the business about where the differences exist. And there are many positive differences and some not positive differences, but I would call all the differences productive.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't, positive and negative is a bit probably the wrong phraseology. It would be that everything's productive, but some are harder to accept than others.
Yeah. And how would your wife describe you now? Would she see a different Keith to the one that was at Santander?
Very much so. I think my kids are always the best judge, actually. My kids are 15 and 13. And There was a phase when they were younger when I used to come in and I would be quite wired. You know, I'd ridden home through central London for a start as fast as I could, because that's what I did. I rode fast everywhere. And I used to ride to work and back every day. And I would still be in, I wouldn't be thinking about work, but I'd still be in the same operating mode, because I'd be cycling home really quick and really wired, and I'd be shouting at drivers who were cutting me up and being a bit of a hooligan on a bike, really, if I'm being honest. And I didn't, when I look back at it, by the way, I didn't enjoy any of those rides. I didn't embrace enjoying the ride. I needed to get from A to B really quick to prove I was getting fitter or stronger or whatever. I was trying to fit too much in. So they would say, there would be, they used to call phrases like angry daddy and happy daddy, right? And so they would draw distinctions between who I was. And they'd try and judge who I was when I came in. And I would say the biggest thing they would say now is there isn't that delineation anymore. I'm always there ready for them.
Yeah.
Open, not always happy, right? Because we can't always be happy. But I'm not this slightly schizophrenic. I don't want to use the word schizophrenic, because that wasn't what it was. But I wasn't two or three different personas, depending on the mood I was in. I wasn't ill or anything, but I don't want to, you know, kind of get anywhere near that. But it was more that I had modes and mindsets that I went into with triggers involved in them. And now I'm just much more open and relaxed, and my job is to make them as good as they can be. So I have to enable that environment. I can't do that for them, but I can enable the environment. I can make it feel safe. I can make it feel open. I can make it feel happy. That's what I regard as success now. Whereas before, it was providing food on the table, holidays, let's do stuff, let's go out. I got myself onto a really fast-moving treadmill, I guess.
Yes, but that's so much what... Well, you know, I mean, look, you were in financial services a long time. That's the kind of culture of many financial services companies, of very many male leaders and female leaders too. But, you know, you were kind of living a stereotype in many ways of what is expected as a senior leader in a particular sector who's high achieving, who's very fit. You know, you were doing all of those things. And actually to not be like that in many ways must be maybe not more difficult for you as a person, but definitely more difficult to be able to stand for that when that's not what we see from most leaders.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think that society's evolving to allow people to be more like that, if I'm being honest. The very fact there's a podcast about this subject and we're having a discussion and there are businesses that provide help in this space now, there never could have been 10 years ago. Even the training I went on with Jean and the Energy Project was still very much about performance.
Yeah.
You know, it still had that very, we will deliver extreme improvements in performance kind of mentality. But that's evolved now. So you're right. Yeah, it's, I still don't think there's a long, long way to go, right? And diversity is helping, because we're getting people with different mindsets, different backgrounds, and that should be recognised. I think I'm going to say something slightly controversial here, but it comes from my experience in banking. I think the female leader can be more like herself now than she could be 10, certainly 20 years ago, and particularly when I look at banking, where it was very it was a tough environment for women to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thrive. And I saw some very powerful, successful women. Anna Boateen, Susan Allen recently, who's just got an OBE. And Susan and Anna are very different creatures. Anna's much more experienced and older. She's had to come up the tough way through Spanish culture as well, in terms of the male-female view. And Susan's been able to evolve and be much more herself and not have to behave with those... depending on some of those masculine traits. So she's herself much more. And I mean, Anna's very much herself, but she's developed, she's a very, very powerful individual as a entity, because she's had to develop many layers of
kind
of protection.
But I think that's what we now know that can be much more effective, can't we? Cultures where men and women and everyone can be themselves in a much more effective way. So that, you know, that sort of ready, bright glow is something that everyone can experience, not just those selected few. And you know, you can have that real balance, can't you? So I know, you know, well-being is very important for you. You do a lot of exercise. You've clearly done a lot of, you know, help on yourself, time with yourself. How much of your time now do you think about your own well-being and your own kind of, you know, the importance to keep focused on that versus the performance that you've got at work?
I would say I would devote at least an hour a day to my own well-being. Some days it's more. Sometimes you have periods of time when you do it, and you have blocks of time. You may go try some different things. But it's also recognizing what well-being is. It's not like I sit down here and, or I go and sit in a weird blue room and think about my well-being. But every moment that I get where I'm experiencing enjoyment is partly benefiting my well-being. So that's things like eating really nice food, spending time walking. The sun's literally just come out here. I'm going to go out lunchtime after I've had my lunch for 10, even if it's 10 minutes, breathe in some air. Just those things are all those moments. So I don't know how much they add up to over a day. Reading a book, writing a gratitude list, whatever, you know, the thing is, all those moments are times when you reflect and enjoy things and think about yourself. So that's what I do.
Yeah, which is just fantastic and brilliant to talk about it, because I think, you know, it's always good, which is the point of this podcast, for people to hear and be inspired by leaders where increasingly it's part of the way that they are. Not, as you say, it's not the this is the well-being moment. And, you know, there are 1,140 minutes in the day. And, you know, you can kind of go, well, I'm going to take 60 minutes to make sure I get some exercise. But actually, as you say, to really be able to do both, to think about your own well-being, it's micro moments throughout the whole day that add up to being a better leader, a better dad, a better husband, a better friend, a better man. Keith, I wanted to finish on this quote by Henry David Thoreau, who says, "Most people lead lives of quiet desperation and go to their graves with their song still in them." Now, you know, of course, we've talked a lot about purpose, and you're very clear now about what your purpose is about. So there's certainly, you know, your song is out there as a person. But I know that music is really important to you. If you had to choose a song that maybe means something to you, that sums you up, that sums up your purpose, your song, what would it be?
There's an artist called Nick Cave, and the Bad Seeds. Who was my favourite artist. And the song is Into My Arms.
Oh, how lovely. Tell me why.
Because I've been to see Nick Cave, I don't know, 20 plus times over the years. And it was at one of his gigs when he was singing this song. I was looking at my then partner and thinking, wouldn't it be amazing if we had kids and had a family and spent our lives together? I just had a bit of a moment. It was in Hammersmith Apollo. It's not called Hammersmith Apollo anymore. I can't remember what it's called now. It's been sold to a corporate. But Hammersmith Apollo, and as I called it back then, it was on a Friday night. And it stayed with me ever since. And it's sort of gone with me on the journey of having children and life changing and relationships evolving. And situations like this pandemic and the crisis that we've had with that, and what will come out of the next side. And it will stay with me forever for that reason.
Yeah, that's a lovely, lovely song. Amazing. And lovely way to end. Thank you, Keith. Look, the orange glow of the Ready Breck around you, which I've so often seen, I've loved talking to you about how you've gone even further in your personal journey and how you've enabled to take that to lead new teams at Camelot, but take us through the journey that you have at Santander. But I think also just to be very open, very honest about yourself, it's lovely to hear. Thank you very much for sharing your journey. And I can't wait to see you again and have a hug.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it too. It's been an absolute pleasure, Suki. Thank you very much for inviting me. I believe that leaders are better when they think deeply about work, about its meaning in their lives, that simply hitting goals or targets on time and on budget is not enough. Work should be a positive influence on everyone in the business, inside and outside of work. That people work best when they feel safe and are ready to stretch themselves to see how good they can be. That how we choose to respond to events is the last of the human freedoms, and this applies to leaders twice as much. That a clear and ambitious purpose and the conscious development of a culture to support that purpose is the responsibility of leadership if we are to get high performance and great results. That high performance is often uncomfortable, so leaders need to manage that discomfort for themselves and others, not seek to remove it. Leaders need to face into difficult issues and run towards them, however uncomfortable that might be. Business should not make people ill. It should be a force for good.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed Reset the podcast, I'd love it if you would forward it to your work colleagues, friends, and family. Reset the podcast is a Let's Reset and Advertising Week global production. Executive producer is Richard Larson, with me, Suki Thompson. Thanks to our sponsor, Liars Non-Alcoholic Spirits, and voiceover artist, Talitha Penny. Music provided by Audio Network.